Matt just quit mid segment.
We are back on the radio.
Oh yeah, my bad. We are on the radio. Matt George with us here. Matt George with us here, live from the interrogation room over at the ABC 10 studios. Matt, Kings keep rolling, man. Kings keep rolling, and I know there's Denver tonight. I know it's a tough game. I know DeMar said it's the toughest back-to-back in the NBA, but wins are a little sweeter after they're against the Golden State Warriors.
More than a little. That's a big what is the saying or the song? Spoonful of sugar. That was like a cup of sugar just dumped into your breakfast this morning with the Kings winning over the Golden State Warriors. Hell yeah, we absolutely take that. It was fun. The game at the end became a pretty fun battle, a fourth quarter shootout in a lot of ways, with big Kings run, big Warriors run, big Kings run, and then the Kings just had the last run to ultimately win that game. But it was a fun game. The environment for Kings Warriors is always fun. I'm in the minority where for Kings Warriors and Kings Lakers, I don't want opposing fans to take over the Golden One Center, and they never do. They always act like they do, but they never do. It's always still the vast majority are Kings fans. But I like those Warrior fans in attendance, and I like the Laker fans in attendance. I like the atmosphere. I like the buzz. It's just there's always a big game feel in Sacramento when the Kings play the Warriors and the Kings play the Lakers. So I dig the environment. It's always fun. It's always loud. And we were treated to a fun one that ended for the good guys last night.
I'll ask both of you guys. I think I know the answer. But the Warriors are now on that same level as Lakers when it comes to – quote-unquote rivalry, hatred amongst Kings fans, or is it still Lakers by themselves and then Warriors?
To me, it's Lakers clear by themselves. I mean, that really? And that just stems back to childhood trauma. Yeah, no, it's Warriors-Kings has always felt like a big brother, little brother rivalry, and the thing is the who's the big brother and who's the little brother has changed over the decades. The Kings were big brother big time back when they were good and the Warriors were terrible. And the Kings we were talking about this last night, the Kings would literally send busfuls of fans to Oracle Arena for Kings and Warriors back in the day. And then of course the Warriors became the dynasty. And when the Warriors became the dynasty and Sacramento struggled for all those years, I mean, it's crazy just recently that Kings and Warriors have been good or been playoff teams at the same time. And then we got that playoff series, which was poetic in many ways. But to me, Lakers will always be clear on a tier of their own. I mean, Kobe Bryant and Shaq were my villains growing up. How everything went down in the early 2000s, 2002, right? Lakers are clear and beyond for just hatred and a passionate dislike for the fan base and for the logo and I still won't allow yellow and purple combinations of coloring anywhere near me. So that Lakers are clear for me, but the Warriors, they're definitely up there, but they're not in Laker territory for me.
Gotcha. I don't care about the Lakers. I don't know. That feels so, I mean, that was 20 years ago. I guess if we just break it down to fan bases, yeah, the Laker fans are annoying. I think the Warriors fans are way worse. But I don't know.
I'm just
unfazed by the Lakers.
There's an element I think of, and maybe you feel this way, like as annoying as you think Laker fans can be, they've probably been Lakers fans their entire life. You know what I mean? So you can accept, like, all right, you've been a Laker fan forever, like.
Sure.
This cool. Warriors fan, there is scientific proof that some of them just started being Warriors fans, and now it's Warriors.
Yeah, that's why they're Steph more annoying.
Better. It's like, shut the hell up.
Steph better.
To me, D'Lo, it's revisionist history, but the reason why it will always be Lakers for me, even though it was 20 years ago, is it's the difference between a title and not having a title. And the not having a title setting off the spiral of events that has taken place over the last couple of decades of how bad. I'm of the belief that if the Sacramento Kings had won a title in 2002, which they were supposed to, then what we've gone through over the last two decades, I don't think happens, or it certainly doesn't play out the same way. I don't think Adelman is fired in 2006. We don't go through the coaching carousel of 14 head coaches, whatever it was, over the last nearly 20 years. So I believe that the Lakers were in a large capacity because of kind of the decline of the Sacramento Kings through the vast majority of my teenagehood into my adulthood and the start of my career. So I, whether it's fair or not, I lump the Lakers into that blame and that trauma. So that's why it'll always be up there for me. Plus, I worshipped Mike Bibby growing up as a kid. Like, I shaved my head to look like Mike Bibby. I loved Mike Bibby growing up.
How did that work out?
And when Kobe elbowed Mike in the face and made him bleed, I was like, I remember being in tears as a kid when that happened. Of course, Mike Bibby got the foul call.
Yeah, I was going to say, when Mike fouled Kobe and started bleeding because
with
of
his
it.
Face.
Yeah,
right. It was there's trauma that my therapist and I are still working through.
There you go. Well, you'll get there one day. You and Kenny and these sports traumas that last decades upon decades. If you have to crown, hold on, just real quick. Just got a text from Danny in San Francisco. Wow, good thing I've been on calls. Y'all were about to do me dirty. Oh, shout out to our boy Danny in San Francisco. Matt, we started the show just calling all of our friends in San Francisco. They didn't want to talk today. Everybody got calls. Everybody was busy today. But if you could crown someone from last night's game, where you got, I'm going to give the bulk of the credit. I'm going to salute someone. I'm going to name an MVP, if you will, from last night's game. Who would it be?
Man, I want to cop out. I want to cop out and split the crown in half and give it to two people. But I guess I'll start with the guy who actually won the TBOG crown, and that's Keegan Murray. I mean, Keegan Murray's the guy that starts on Steph Curry. Keegan Murray's the guy with the bulk of the responsibility of guarding Steph Curry. Now, I want to split the crown in half and give the other half to Keon Ellis, because he comes in and just picks up the intensity on Steph Curry. Holding Steph Curry to 14 points, holding Steph Curry to 2 points, 1 of 5 shooting, 3 turnovers in the second half, that don't happen. And Keegan Murray actually said it best after the game. The Sacramento Kings turned Steph Curry into a facilitator, but they didn't turn him into a facilitator for Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and the Dynasty Warriors. They turned him into a facilitator for Andrew Wiggins, sure, who had a pretty solid game, and then end of bench fringe rotation guys that got significant playing time because of the amount of injuries that the Warriors are dealing with. Yeah, you live with that. Now, those guys almost played well enough for the Warriors to win that game, so I give them credit. They played hard. They played well. I was impressed by some of those young guys that they have over there in Golden State. But you turn Steph Curry into a facilitator for end-of-bench fringe rotation guys instead of having Steph Curry beat you, when we've experienced firsthand inside the Golden 1 Center, Game 7, what it's like when Steph Curry says, screw all of y'all, I'm going to do it myself. Yeah. Right? And that's what I thought had to happen for the Warriors to win that game. And again, credit to them. They nearly won it without that. But if the Kings' game plan was, hey, let's limit Steph Curry and turn him into a facilitator, they did that perfectly. Keegan Murray was the start of that. Again, we're talking about a 6'9 forward, 6'8, 6'9 forward, who has primary responsibilities, not just staying in front of Steph Curry, but chasing him around the perimeter, like you guys talked about. That nearly killed Matthew Dellavedova, but here's Keegan Murray able to do it and handle that. And then this is where I bring the Keon in, and you talk about a 1-2 punch. Like, Steph can get frustrated and exhausted trying to deal with Keegan Murray for 6 minutes of the first quarter or however much time. And then Keegan gets a breather or gets shipped over to Wiggins, and here comes Keon Ellison to even pick up the intensity with his on-ball defense. So that's a 1-2 defensive tandem that I said this last night. When the Kings get back to the playoffs, whoever the best player is on that team, unless that best player is like a center, like Nikola Jokic in the Denver Nuggets, whoever the best player, especially a guard who the Kings are facing in a best-of-7 series, is going to have to deal with potentially 7 games of Keegan and Keon being thrown at them on a nightly basis. That's a big card up the sleeve of Doug Christie.
I'll preference my joke by letting everybody know I'm just joking when I say this, but I guess I'm the only person in the city that likes DeMar DeRozan then, huh? I guess I'm the only one. Because DeMar DeRozan is the one. He gets the crown. The man scores 19 in the third quarter, which you had to come back from. Didn't miss a shot. Ends up with 33. And he can't get a mention from anybody after, not saying you, Matt, but after people routinely talk about how he's just a bad fit. He need to go to the. DeMar DeRozan arguably is exceeding expectations with the way he's played here in Sacramento. Like he is as advertised when everybody was dancing around on July 4th or whatever day that was.
Nobody was dancing. It was 119 degrees outside, but go ahead.
And he had a sweatsuit on, but
he did. Fire one too.
It was. But DeMar DeRozan, if anything, I'll say it right now. If the Kings advance, if they get to the playoffs first and foremost, and if they advance, it's going to be because DeMar DeRozan is on this roster. De'Aaron Fox is shooting like he was last night a year ago. They don't win. I don't care what the defense is looking like. They don't win. They don't score enough points. De'Aaron Fox in his last three games or so is able to be the way he has been, and they win a game because DeMar DeRozan is averaging 25 points a game in the month of January. I guess I'm the only one that likes DeMar. Your thoughts, man.
Okay, what we're not gonna do is we're not going to make this a DeMar versus anything else thing, Kenny Caraway. What we are going to do is recognize that yes, DeMar was phenomenal with his quite literal perfect third quarter that he had, the 19 points, 7 of 7 from the field. 1 of 1 from three, and that was a deep 3-2, KC. Remember, people told us that Debo couldn't shoot threes. Remember, people told us that he couldn't shoot threes. Yeah, he pulling up. I have to look this up, but his 3-point percentage since Doug Christie took over, this is might just be a coincidence or might not. But his 3-point percentage since Doug Christie took over is pretty good. I would not be surprised if it's hovering around 40%. So, I mean, he's been shooting the three really, really well recently. He deserves absolutely a ton of credit for what he did in that third quarter offensively to help get the Kings back into that game. But the Kings started their turnaround on defense. The Kings started their turnaround with defensive intensity. Now, Debo was a part of that. Debo was playing good defense last night, too. But the Kings started turning the Warriors over. Then the Warriors turned the ball over 8 times in the third quarter. The Kings got 23, if I'm not mistaken, fast break points in the second half. They scored 21 or something like that points off of, I think, 12 Warrior turnovers in the second half. The problem in that first quarter was not just that the Kings weren't making shots. We've seen that before. The problem in that first quarter was the Kings were standing around and ball watching defensively. I just thought they were a step slow. Like, they were just getting beat to the rim. They were getting their closeouts were slow and lazy. That's one of the reasons why the Warriors knocked down 14 threes. The Warriors had one fewer made three in the first quarter than the Kings had made field goals. Right? Defensively, Sacramento was just not there in that first half. And then we saw a clear switch, a clear defensive intensity pickup in the start of the third quarter. It resulted in the Kings actually kind of getting in foul trouble a little bit in the start of the third quarter. They flipped it and were overly aggressive, had some whistle against them, and then kind of drew it back a little bit. But the Kings getting out in transition, turning the Warriors over, was what started things. And then DeMar put on his cape and said, get on my back, I'm going to carry us back into this game with the phenomenal third quarter that he had. So DeMar 100% deserves credit. But to me, what happened last night starts with the defense. And when you look at defense and talk about defense, you talk about the work the Kings did on Steph.
Not that anyone asked me. I'm just a point guard. I facilitate around
here. The organizer.
I'm just the organizer.
Always the organizer.
I'm the Fred Van Fleet over here. I would have picked DeMar. I would have ignored the 26-18 that DeMontis Sabonis put up, because guess Kenny is just like the national media, and he ignores DeMontis Sabonis too. To Matt's point, Will Z actually just wrote an article regarding DeMar DeRozan and what he's doing from the three-point line with Doug Christie as the head coach. In the last 9 games, DeMar DeRozan has attempted 41 three-pointers, good for an average of 4.6 per contest. That's the most threes he's taken in a 9-game span since 2018. For more context, over the first 29 games of the season, DeRozan took a total of 60 shots from beyond the arc. That's a 2.1 clip. Again, that's through the first 29 games of the season. He took 60 shots. He's hitting them over the course of the last 9 games at a 36.6% clip. 6.6% over what he did with Mike Brown as the head coach.
I'll ask both of you guys, would you guys agree with that assessment that I made, though, that he may be exceeding expectations for when he came in here? Now, I know people will look at, you don't play defense, you don't, or that's the narrative, that you don't play defense, you don't do this and that. that's not, to me, that's not why you brought him in here. You brought him in here to be a 20-point-per-game scorer, and I think he's averaging like 22 or something like that. And then you see what he's doing in January. I'll just speak for myself, and I'll just ask you guys the question. He is not only matching what I expected from him, he's exceeding those expectations so far.
Yeah, I think exceeding depends on whose expectations you're talking about. He's far away exceeding everybody's expectations who wrote bad about a 35-year-old, 36-year-old coming to Sacramento. And how dare you do a pick swap with San Antonio in 2031 to get DeMar DeRozan? Like, those people were always whacking off base. I think he's mainly meeting the expectations that I had coming into this year with how he is performing, right? What I loved about that third quarter from DeMar was that was a game that was like the Kings were struggling to get offensive rhythm, right? It was a muddy game. Credit to the Warriors. They weren't really allowing the Kings to get out and transition at first in that game. So Sacramento was forced more into the half court. Who do you have to lean on in half court offense? That's DeMar's game, right? Mm-hmm. So the biggest difference that I see, and Doug does deserve some credit for it, but I think that the main difference and the main factor in DeMar and his recent success is time. Like, DeMar has now had half a season.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Season to get comfortable, mm-hmm. to understand when to get the ball in his spots and when to fit and flow in Sacramento's offense more. And that's where I give DeMar a ton of credit. This is where I'll say he's exceeding expectations, KC. I think DeMar has drastically improved in, oh no, I can still get shots and I can still get looks in the flow of the offense, right? That's where a lot of these threes are coming from. Mm-hmm. He's hitting these corner threes. He's hitting these wing threes by the Kings touching the paint and spraying, which is something that Mike Brown coined that Doug Christie has continued because it's not anything Mike Brown invented. This is a common strategy in the NBA. Get downhill, touch the paint, kick it out for an open three. We're seeing DeMar getting more of these looks and taking those looks with confidence. And then the Kings are finding out and realizing, okay, let's get the ball to DeMar in these spots. Like, a lot of people were frustrated with DeMar to start the season because it felt like he was stopping the ball. Now it feels like the Kings are going to him when the defense is stopping the ball and they just need a bucket or to get him to flow. And then when we talk about fourth quarters too, the last few games when DeMar's had it going and Fox has been struggling a little bit, that the fourth quarter time is the time where you go, all right, clear out, give DeRozan room on the wing and let him go to work. So I think the Kings and DeMar are more comfortable and discovered how to be more comfortable with each other. And that's the biggest difference that I've personally noticed.
Looking at some of the moves Doug Christie made last night, another guy who I think deserves a crown in to acknowledge what he did last night is we look at Devin Carter. We look at Kevin Huerter. We look at Alex Lynn. All those guys played first half minutes yesterday. None of them played in the second half. Of course, that is that's the context of the game. That's the context of the third quarter that Kenny laid out a second ago. Not only what DeMar DeRozan was doing in that third quarter, but also what Domantas Sabonis was doing in that third quarter. That seems to be, Matt, one of the big differences between Doug Christie and Mike Brown is Doug is not worried about the clock. He's not worried about a rotation. He's not worried about what he normally is doing. He's looking at the game. He's coaching on a field. And if there's a group of guys that he can't play in the second half, he's just not going to play them.
100%. I think when Mike would adjust his rotations, it was when a player was playing so well that it would force him to. And he talked about the fort. Man, DeMar was cooking. I couldn't take him out. Mm-hmm. But Mike would not necessarily adjust, or he would he would adjust and have a shorter leash with the wrong guys or at the wrong times, right? It still sticks with me. Y'all remember last season? I don't remember who the opponent was, but Malik had a rough first half, and Mike had a short leash with him for the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. And that's Malik Monk. Mm-hmm. Like, that's your sixth man, and he did that with Malik. And I remember going, now I know Malik probably did some things crazy. I mean, hell, he dunked the ball off of his head and robbed himself of a dunk last night.
Crazy.
Like, that's the chaos of Malik
and he
Monk.
Didn't even realize it. That's he was like, no, it hit my head. He's like, no, that's it. That counts. No, it didn't.
That's the chaos of Malik Monk, right? You're going to get some phenomenal moments. More often than not, it's going to create greatness, but there are going to be some erratic moments where he dunks the ball off his head or he throws an errant pass. So that just happens. It's not to the level of like Buddy Hield, had to get a shot in there, but it's different. So, but Mike had a short leash with that at times. We saw the ridiculous short leash that Mike had with Keon, but Doug clearly had a rotational plan, and he had some lineups. I'm not going to lie to you. He had some lineups in that first half that are like, what is this? Like, he had a lineup at one point where it was De'Aaron Fox and four bench guys, and it looked terrible. I think it was like Trey Lyles, Alex Len, Kevin Herter, and maybe Devin Carter, or I don't remember. It was just not a good lineup. Never went back to it for the rest of the game. And like you said, those guys that played in the first quarter or first half didn't play in the second half. Those are simple adjustments that Doug Christie has to this point done correctly. So I 100% agree with you. Doug deserves credit and recognition for that. Hey, let's break away from the mold. Let's break away from the model. To me, a minutes specific rotation should be a guideline or a foundation that you then build upon or adjust based off the context of the game. I think Doug does that a lot better than Mike did, which also speaks to an issue that Mike had, which was stubbornness, whereas Doug is more of a flow of the game type coach, just like he was very much a flow of the game type player.
Do you look at this game tonight as mission impossible, you know, with everything that's stacked up against them schedule wise, going into Denver being a good team, all this other stuff? And we talk about a quick leash, and then we've talked about, like, hey, if you're down by 18, I'm gonna give you 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. Do you think they do this for the game? Like, look, show me something in this first half, or, you know, I'm gonna get a little quicker with the minutes and get you guys some rest for the rest of this road trip. How do you look at this game tonight against Denver? Oh my gosh!
Oh, the light sensor went off. Oh, there we go.
Oh my god!
The Undertaker's here,
man. That ABC building is wild.
It's an empty building half the time, and it's just ghosts in here.
No, we can relate. We're used to working in an empty building too. It's fine.
But we have all one thermostat. It's not different temperatures depending upon what rooms you go into.
Well,
before the Undertaker nearly attacked me, hearing your question, Casey, the way I'm thinking about and approaching this game is actually the way that kind of Doug Christie has laid out every single game for me, which is our opponent is faceless. Their circumstance doesn't matter. We go in and play our game, and that's good enough for us. Right. So, and Doug has made it very clear that doesn't always mean it's going to result in a win. But if we play the way we want to play and we lose, we tip our cap, we move on, we learn from it, and blah, blah, blah. So the way I look at this game tonight is the circumstances are what they are, right? G-Man tweeted out last night that lights were out at 4:25 a.m., mm-hmm. right? They're already tipping off less than 24 hours after they tipped off in Sacramento. They're tipping off at 6. They tipped off at 7 last night. So it's already a tough turnaround, let alone the elevation and the late night and sleeping routines and blah, 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 blah. It is what it is. It's all stuff that you can't control. So Doug Christie's like, we don't have a face on our opponent. We don't have a face on all of that. If we go out and just play the way that we want to play, if we lose, we can live with that. So that's the measuring stick. That's the barometer. That's the standard that Doug Christie is holding this team to. So that's the standard that I think we need to also hold this team to, or that's the lens that I'm choosing to look at this team now. Mm-hmm. Is, do I expect the Kings to win tonight in Denver? I'll be honest, no, I don't. But I expect the Sacramento Kings to still play hard. Mm-hmm. And if it turns out that the elevation gets to them, or we see clear fatigue or whatever, and Denver takes advantage of that because they have as big of a home court advantage as it gets in the NBA. They have it. Not, and it's not because of the fans. They got great fans over there. They have that advantage of that elevation. If that's the difference in tonight's game, I think Doug Christie and the Kings can live with that as long as they handle their business in later games when they get that rest. So that's how I'm looking at tonight's game. Is it a schedule loss? I don't know. It's kind of a fun thing to talk about and a fun thing to say. I don't believe in that. I know DeMar DeRozan had fun last night saying, like, it feels like a setup. Mm-hmm. I know players can feel that way. It's 48 minutes. It's NBA basketball. Put your head down. Play hard. You know that you can compete with these guys. And put yourself in a position to where maybe you can steal it. Maybe you can win. Don't put yourself in a position where you're, like you guys were saying earlier, don't be down by 18 again in the first half and hope to climb your way out of it. Because that's probably not a blueprint for success tonight. But fight hard. Battle hard. Try and execute your game plan. You come up short, you live with it, you move on. That's the way to look at it.
I think one thing we can all do is, like Matt, you just said, you don't expect them to win tonight in Denver. I think one difference, like right now, is you don't have to expect them to lose either.
That's true. Yeah.
You can just kind of go into the game and, you know, hope for the best and see what they see. It's just one of those, you know, tough matchups that is built into the schedule, scheduled loss or otherwise. It's just one of those tough matchups that's built into a schedule. And the second night of a back-to-back in Denver is always something that's looked at by teams and fans alike.
I don't look at this game as tough as I think it is and think they have no chance. Mm-hmm. There were times, you know, whether with a bad team or just the way they've been playing maybe last year or earlier this year, they ain't got no shot in this one. You know, I don't feel that way tonight. Mm-hmm. I think they got to play damn near perfect game, but I think they're capable of that, and they got a shot.
And that's another thing about Doug Christie that I talked about on the podcast last night. I talked about things that Doug Christie has restored for me and restored for this team. Number one, he's restored home court advantage, right? 7-0 in Sacramento since taking over. Like, and he understands Sacramento and those fans and the impact that they can have better than anybody else. So Doug has done a good job getting that message across. He's restored that. Doug Christie has restored this team's ability to execute and perform in the clutch, right, and close out games. A perceived strength of this team is once again a strength thanks to Doug Christie, or it's a clear noticeable difference since Doug Christie has taken over. The Kings are 6-0, I think, in close games. I'm not going to say clutch games because clutch is very specific to mountain time left and within 5 points, but in close games the Kings are 6-0 under Doug Christie. But number three is Doug Christie has restored the confidence in myself. And I know multiple people that I've talked to, whether it's media members or fans, the confidence in them that you remember in 2023, if the game was close, we're like, yeah, they got this. Like De'Aaron Fox is clutch player of the year. Like, this is their bag. If the game was close, we were surprised that the Kings lost it in 2023. Like, that's how good they were in the clutch. That's how many clutch games they won. Earlier this season, y'all, if the game was close, I was like, well, uh-oh. Like, I just didn't feel good about it. Yeah. I felt like the Kings were going to battle. They were going to fight, and they were going to lose in the closing minutes. They might have they had that DeMontis Sabonis game winner in Miami that was like, oh, hey, that was cool. But more often than not, they were losing those games. Now, Kings had that game last night. I was like, yeah, I think they're going to win this. They're going to close this out. Kings had that win against Houston. Yeah, I think they're going to win this game, close this out. Kings had the double overtime win against the Heat. I was like, yeah, I think the Kings got this. So Doug has restored that confidence and that assurance in this team. So I think that speaks to what you guys were just saying. There's now the confidence that this Kings team is not just going to lose a game, that a scheduled loss doesn't exist for the Kings. I think there's that confidence is restored. Mm-hmm. And Doug Christie and the way the Kings are playing gives me belief that they can win on any given night. And if they lose, as long as they lose the right way, they can live with it.
Do you think it was, you know, because we actually had this discussion earlier, do you think it was as simple as they kind of had to get that first one? You know, you get that first one with Doug, and then, like, you get that close win, and then all of a sudden that close win becomes two. And I point to that Philadelphia game where they were down against Philadelphia and have that 15-0 run going to win that game. And all of a sudden you go from feeling like you can't win a close game to all of a sudden you feel like you can't lose a close game.
I think that's part of it. I think it was important for the Kings to get more than one, right? Because they've had those one-offs and they kind of fall back into the – to me, I think the big difference was how different those games were. Mm-hmm. They all came down to the wire, but the Kings won the – was it the Philly game, for example, because they defensively shut Philly down and went on that 15-0 run. Yeah. The Kings won the Heat game because they hit some massive shots. The Kings won the, was it the Wizards game or whatever, went because they were perfect from the foul line to end that game.
Definitely right? wasn't so the Wizards. The Kings,
I'm about to say, they beat the Wizards' ass. Hey, look, I'm about to say, they've done that a couple times to feel like going perfect.
Yeah. The Heat won. Regardless, yeah, and they did that kind of last night too. De'Aaron Fox. We haven't talked about Fox yet.
The
Fox
one I think you're, six from the one I think you're thinking. I think you're thinking about is the Rockets.
Yeah,
game.
The Rockets game. Yeah,
the Houston game. Yeah. So even like, but these are very different ways that the Kings are accomplishing the same goal, mm-hmm. and I think that's a sign of a good team, right? If you are able to take what the game is giving you and find a way to win, versus the game has to go a very specific way for the Kings to win. That was the. That's what feels like the major difference between now and 2023. Is 2023, the blueprint was the Kings score a boatload of points, the game's close, and De'Aaron Fox closes it out. That was the blueprint, and it worked really well for them that year. And they started figuring them out, starting with the Warriors in that best-of-seven series, and the Kings never really looked the same. Doug has gotten this team, again, short sample size, but it doesn't matter. Doug has gotten this team to find ways in very different types of games with very similar circumstances. And that's a big difference to me. That speaks to Doug's ability to, I think, focus this group and the versatility of this roster that we believe they had coming into it, that they have these pieces to win a defensive battle if that's what it takes. They have DeRozan now, to Casey's point, where Fox ain't got it, DeRozan can close it. Then, of course, they have De'Aaron Fox last night, who looked at Buddy Hield like food. What in the world were the Warriors? I know De'Aaron had only 8 points. How the hell you have a Buddy Hield guard De'Aaron Fox in a close game with like 45 seconds left? De'Aaron looked at Buddy and said, oh yeah, I'm putting this up. And he knocked down the dagger to close that game out. So like the Kings are finding different ways to win. And I really appreciate that.
Man hit 2 shots all day and said, oh, Buddy's good. He had hit 1 shot at that point. He said, Buddy's guarding me. I'm shooting. Forget DeMar's 30. Forget Domas is 22. I got this guy on me. Oh, I got this.
Time to cook.
That's
time
to cook. That's humiliating.
Can we? And I want to talk. Can I say something about De'Aaron Fox too, really quick? Because
sure, I was about to ask
these are ahead. Three. The Kings went 3-0 at home in 3 games offensively where De'Aaron Fox didn't look like himself scoring the basketball. Like, and I know some fans are disappointed because 2 of those 3 games were national television. Hey, this is a case for you to showcase who you are. And here's the reality too. Like, those games don't do De'Aaron Fox any favors of being an all-NBA player and getting a Supermax contract.
Yeah.
The games that De'Aaron Fox played, he made winning plays, right? Mm-hmm. And if De'Aaron's saying publicly, whether it's on Draymond's podcast or in an article with The Athletic or whatever, that winning is his primary motivation for where he chooses to spend or to sign his next contract, what we've seen from De'Aaron over these last 3 games is – I'm going to put the spotlight aside. I don't have it. I'm not shooting the ball well. Maybe his fingers bothering him, whatever the circumstances. DeMar's got it going, or Sabonis has got it going. Doug Christie shared with us after the, I think it was the Washington game, because he had 13 assists in that game. Doug Christie shared with us. He said, hey, Fox, you want a play drawn up for you? And Fox said, no, we got these guys cooking. Let's keep going with them. Like, Fox is making good team winning basketball plays. Mm-hmm. And I know Kings fans are a little disappointed or frustrated because it's been a while since we've seen a 30 bomb, or it's been a long time since we've seen Fox go for 60 and then 49 in consecutive games. But what I've seen is a star that has stepped up in other areas. Yeah, it's tough when you see SGA going for 50 and you see these other guys making these big plays and putting up these big scoring title and scoring nights on national television. I know that stings when De'Aaron's supposed to be on that level, but I'm watching a guy who is recognizing the circumstances of that game and where the Kings are at in the season and saying, I'm going to do what I need to do to help the Kings win basketball games. And I think when you have a star that's not only willing but is capable to do that, you have a star that's capable of going, all right, I don't have it tonight, so I'm going to dish 13 assists. I don't have it tonight, so I'm going to pull down 5-6 rebounds. I don't have it tonight, so I'm going to defend my ass off in the fourth quarter. When you got that, talk about value. You talk about something that a head coach loves to have. So I think De'Aaron deserves a ton of credit for how he's played and how he's adapted over this 3-game win streak during that homestand.
And you know what? The other thing about it, too, is, you know, you're winning. You're winning. And I think so many times, I understand, you know, the process and how you get there. It matters to a certain degree. But, you know, look, De'Aaron Fox not shooting the ball well or taking enough shots or whatever, but they're still finding ways to win. That's all that matters is they're winning. He'll find his shot again. He'll start scoring again. I think it's going to pick up over this road trip. I think he's going to, you know, unless he's maybe not right or not hurt and he's got to work through some stuff, I think he's going to start scoring again at a high level on this road trip. The bottom line is, are we getting the wins? And that's what we're doing right now. If you talk about the Sacramento Kings, and that's all that should really matter, not how it's getting done or what it looks like. Are they able to win? They are right now, and that's the most important thing.
And Sass is in the comment section, and I see him. You're not going to win good games, or you're not going to win games against good teams with Fox playing like this. You just beat the Houston Rockets on your home floor with Fox playing like this. And think about the two games that you've played against Houston and how different those games were. The Kings won that first game because Dylan Brooks was stupid, opened his mouth, and pissed De'Aaron Fox off. Mm-hmm. And De'Aaron then put that game away, by, like, pretty much took over that game. So you beat Houston on one hand. This is where we talk about the Kings finding different ways to win. You beat Houston because your superstar took over that game because you pissed him off. Mm-hmm. Then you beat Houston on your home floor with De'Aaron Fox struggling offensively, but he was feeding DeMar and he was feeding the other guys that were going. And he, like, when De'Aaron Fox is on the floor, even if he's not scoring, he's a presence. Like, that's a big deal. Like, if De'Aaron Fox is on the floor, defenses are constantly paranoid about what he's doing. And if a defense is clear, like the Houston game plan in that game was to take De'Aaron Fox out of the game or make things as difficult for him as possible. So the Kings, everybody else stepped up. And Fox got everybody else involved so that they could win that basketball game. So again, that's a good sign of a good team. The Kings have beaten good teams, and they don't need Fox to score 30 points every single night for them to beat good teams anymore. That's one of the reasons why you went out and got DeRozan in the first place too.
Great stuff from our man Matt George right there, ABC 10 reporter and Locked On Kings host. Matt, we appreciate you.